Chapter 6. Dark Prophecy. The farmhouse door shook under furious blows from outside. The heavy bar across the door jumped in its brackets. Beyond the window next to the door moved the heavy-muzzled silhouette of a trolloc. There were windows everywhere, and more shadowy shapes outside. Not shadowy enough, though. Rand could still make them out.
The windows, he thought desperately.
He backed away from the door, clutching his sword before him in both hands.
Even if the door holds, they can break in the windows. Why aren't they trying the windows?
With a deafening metallic screech, one of the brackets pulled partly away from the doorframe, hanging loose on nails ripped a finger's width out of the wood. The bar quivered from another blow, and the nails squealed again.
We have to stop them,
Rand shouted.
Only we can't. We can't stop them.
He looked around for a way to run, but there was only the one door. The room was a box. Only one door and so many windows.
We have to do something. Something. It's too late,
Matt said.
Don't you understand?
His grin looked odd on a bloodless pale face, and the hilt of a dagger stood out from his chest, the ruby that capped it blazing as if it held fire. The gem had more life than his face.
It's too late for us to change anything.
I've finally gotten rid of them,
Perrin said, laughing. Blood streamed down his face like a flood of tears from his empty sockets. He held out red hands, trying to make Rand look at what he held.
I'm free now. It's over.
It's never over, Althor,
Potunfane cried, capering in the middle of the floor.
The battle's never done.
The door exploded in splinters, and Rand ducked away from the flying shards of wood. Two red-clad Aes Sedai stepped through, bowing their master in. A mask the color of dried blood covered Baalzaman's face, but Rand could see the flames of his eyes through the eye slits. He could hear the roaring fires of Baalzaman's mouth.
It is not yet done between us, Althor, Baalzaman said,
and he and Fane spoke together as one.
For you, the battle is never done.
With a strangled gasp, Rand sat up on the floor, clawing his way awake. It seemed he could still hear Fane's voice, as sharp as if the peddler were standing beside him.
It's never over. The battle's never done.
Bleary-eyed, he looked around to convince himself that he was still hidden away where Egwene had left him, bedded down on a pallet in a corner of her room. The dim light of a single lamp suffused the room, and he was surprised to see Nynaeve, knitting in a rocking chair on the other side of the lone bed, its covers still in place. It was night outside. Dark-eyed and slender, Nynaeve wore her hair in a fat braid, pulled over one shoulder and hanging almost to her waist. She had not given up on home. Her face was calm, and she seemed aware of nothing except her knitting as she rocked gently. The steady click-click of her knitting needles was the only sound. The rug silenced the rocking chair. There had been nights of late when he had wished for a carpet on the cold stone floor of his room, but in Shinar, men's rooms were always bare and stark. The walls here had two tapestries, mountain scenes with waterfalls, and flower-embroidered curtains alongside the arrow slits. Cut flowers, white morning stars, stood in a flat round vase on the table by the bed, and more knotted and glazed white sconces on the walls. A tall mirror stood in a corner, and another hung over the washstand, with its blue-striped pitcher and bowl. He wondered why Egwene needed two mirrors. There was none in his room, and he did not miss it. There was only one lamp lit, but four more stood around the room, which was nearly as large as the one he shared with Matt and Perrin. Egwene had it alone. Without looking up, Nynaeve said, "If you sleep in the afternoon, you can't expect to sleep at night." He frowned, though she could not see it. At least, he thought she could not. She was only a few years older than he, but being wisdom added 50 years of authority.
I needed a place to hide and I was tired, he said, then quickly added, I didn't just come here. Egwene invited me into the women's apartments.
Nynaeve lowered her knitting and gave him an amused smile. She was a pretty woman. That was something he would never have noticed back home. One just did not think of a wisdom that way.
The light helped me, Rand. You are becoming more Shinaran every day. invited into the women's apartments, indeed. She sniffed. Any day now you'll start talking about your honor and asking peace to favor your sword. He colored and hoped she did not notice in the dim light. She eyed his sword, its hilt sticking out of the long bundle beside him on the floor. He knew she did not approve of the sword, of any sword, but she said nothing about it for once. Egwene told me why you need a place to hide. Don't worry, we'll keep you hidden from the Ammerlin, or from any other Aes Sedai, if that is what you want. She met his eyes and jerked hers away, but not before he saw her uneasiness, her doubt. That's right, I can channel the power. A man wielding the one power. You ought to be helping the Aes Sedai hunt me down and gentle me. Scowling, he straightened the leather jerkin Egwene had found for him and twisted around so he could lean back against the wall. As soon as I can, I will hide in a cart or sneak out. You won't have to hide me long. Nynaeve did not say anything. She fixed on her knitting, making an angry sound when she dropped a stitch. Where is Egwene? She let the knitting fall onto her lap. I don't know why I am even trying tonight. I can't keep track of my stitches for some reason. She has gone down to see Padan Fane. She thinks seeing faces he knows might help him. Mine certainly did not. She ought to stay away from him. He's dangerous. She wants to help him, Nynaeve said calmly. Remember, she was training to be my assistant, and being a wisdom is not all predicting the weather. Healing is part of it, too. Egwene has the desire to heal, the need to. And if Padan Fane is so dangerous, Moiraine would have said something. He barked a laugh. You didn't ask her. Egwene admitted it, and I can just see you asking permission for anything. Her raised eyebrow wiped the laugh off his face. He refused to apologize, though. They were a long way from home, and he did not see how she could go on being Wisdom of Emmons Field if she was going to Tar Valon. Have they started to search for me yet? Egwene is not sure they will, but Lance says the Ammerlin Seed is here because of me, and I think I'll take his opinion over hers. For a moment, Nynaeve did not answer. Instead, she fussed with her skeins of yarn. Finally, she said, I am not sure. One of the serving women came a little while ago to turn down the bed, she said, as if Egwene would be going to sleep already with the feast for the Ammerlin tonight. I sent her away. She didn't see you. Nobody turns your bed down for you in the men's quarters. She gave him a level look, one that would have set him stammering a year ago. He shook his head. They wouldn't use the maids to look for me, Nynaeve. When I went to the buttery for a cup of milk earlier, there were too many women in the halls. Those who are attending the feast should have been getting dressed, and the others should either have been helping them or getting ready to serve. Or to... She frowned worriedly. There's more than enough work for everybody with the Ammerlin here, and they were not just here in the women's apartments. I saw the Lady Amalisa herself coming out of a storeroom near the buttery with her face all over dust. That's ridiculous. Why would she be a part of a search? Or any of the women, for that matter. They'd be using Lord Agamar's soldiers, and the warders, and the Aes Sedai. They must just be doing something for the feast. Burn me if I know what a Shinaran feast takes. You are a woolhead sometimes, Rand. The men I saw didn't know what the women were doing either. I heard some of them complaining about having to do all the work by themselves. I know it makes no sense that they were looking for you. None of the Aes Sedai seemed to be taking any interest, but Amalisa was not readying herself for the feast by dirtying her dress in a storeroom. They were looking for something, something important. Even if she began right after I saw her, she would barely have time to bathe and change. Speaking of which, if Egwene doesn't come back soon, she'll have to choose between changing and being late. For the first time, he realized that Nynaeve was not wearing the Two Rivers woolens he was used to. Her dress was pale blue silk, embroidered in snowdrop blossoms around the neck and down the sleeves. Each blossom centered on a small pearl, and her belt was tooled in silver with a silver buckle set with pearls. He had never seen her in anything like that. Even feast day clothes back home might not match it. You're going to the feast? Of course. Even if Moiraine had not said I should, I would never let her think I was... Her eyes lit up fiercely for a moment, and he knew what she meant. Nynaeve would never let anyone think she was afraid, even if she was. Certainly not Moraine, and especially not Lan. He hoped she did not know he was aware of her feelings for the warder. After a moment, her gaze softened as it fell on the sleeve of her dress.
"The Lady Amalisa gave me this," she said so softly he wondered if she was speaking to herself.
She stroked the silk with her fingers, outlining the embroidered flowers, smiling, lost in thought.
"It's very pretty on you, Nynaeve. You're pretty tonight."
He winced as soon as he said it. Any wisdom was touchy about her authority, but Nynaeve was touchier than most. The women's circle back home had always looked over her shoulder because she was young, and maybe because she was pretty, and her fights with the mayor and the village council had been the stuff of stories. She jerked her hand away from the embroidery and glared at him, brows lowering. He spoke quickly to forestall her.
"They can't keep the gates barred forever. Once they are opened, I will be gone and the Aes Sedai will never find me. Perrin says there are places in the Black Hills and the Carling grass. You can go for days without seeing a soul. Maybe I can figure out what to do about—"
He shrugged uncomfortably. There was no need to say it, not to her.
"And if I can't, there'll be no one to hurt."
Nynaeve was silent for a moment, then she said slowly,
"I am not so sure, Rand. I can't say you look like more than another village boy to me, but Moraine insists you are Taviran, and I don't think she believes the wheel is finished with you. The Dark One seems—"
"Shaitan is dead," he said harshly,
and abruptly the room seemed to lurch. He grabbed his head as waves of dizziness sloshed through him.
"You fool! You pure, blind, idiotic fool! Naming the Dark One? Bringing his attention down on you? Don't you have enough trouble?"
"He's dead," Rand muttered, rubbing his head.
He swallowed. The dizziness was already fading.
All right. Balsamon if you want, but he's dead. I saw him die, saw him burn.
And I wasn't watching you when the Dark One's eye fell on you just now?
Don't tell me you felt nothing, or I'll box your ears. I saw your face."
"He's dead," Rand insisted.
The unseen watcher flashed through his head and the wind on the tower top. He shivered.
"Strange things happen this close to the Blight."
"You are a fool, Randall Thor."
She shook a fist at him.
"I would box your ears for you if I thought it would knock any sense."
The rest of her words were swallowed as bells crashed out, ringing all over the keep.
He bounded to his feet.
"That's an alarm. They're searching."
"Name the Dark One, and his evil comes down on you." Nynaeve stood more slowly, shaking her head uneasily.
"No, I don't think so. If they are searching for you, all the bells do is warn you. No, if it's an alarm, it is not for you."
"Then what?"
He hurried to the nearest arrow slit and peered out. Lights darted through the night-cloaked keep like fireflies, lamps and torches dashing here and there. Some went to the outer walls and towers, but most of those that he could see milled through the garden below and the one courtyard he could just glimpse part of. Whatever had caused the alarm was inside the keep. The bells fell silent, unmasking the shouts of men, but he could not make out what they were calling.
"If it isn't for me..."
"Egwene!" he said suddenly.
"If he's still alive, if there's any evil, it's supposed to come to me."
Nynaeve turned from looking through another arrow slit.
"What?
Egwene!"
He crossed the room in quick strides and snatched his sword and scabbard free of the bundle.
"Light, it's supposed to hurt me, not her.
She's in the dungeon with Thane. What if he's loose somehow?"
She caught him at the door, grabbing his arm. She was not as tall as his shoulder, but she held on like iron.
"Don't be a worse goat-brained fool than you've already been, Randall Thor. The women are looking for something. Lightman, this is the women's apartments. There will be Aes Sedai out there in the halls, likely as not. Egwene will be all right. She was going to take Matt and Perrin with her. Even if she met trouble, they would look after her. What if she couldn't find them, Nynaeve? Egwene would never let that stop her. She would go alone, the same as you, and you know it. Light, I told her Fane is dangerous. Burn me, I told her."
Pulling free, he jerked open the door and dashed out.
"Light, burn me. It's supposed to hurt me."
A woman screamed at the sight of him, in a laborer's coarse shirt and jerkin with a sword in his hand. Even invited men did not go armed in the women's apartments unless the keep was under attack. Women filled the corridor, serving women in the black and gold, ladies of the keep in silks and laces, women in embroidered shawls with long fringes, all talking loudly at the same time, all demanding to know what was happening. Crying children clung to skirts everywhere. He plunged through them, dodging where he could, muttering apologies to those he shouldered aside, trying to ignore their startled stares. One of the women in a shawl turned to go back into her room, and he saw the back of her shawl, saw the gleaming white teardrop in the middle of her back. Suddenly he recognized faces he had seen in the outer courtyard. Aes Sedai staring at him in alarm now.
"Who are you? What are you doing here? Is the keep under attack? Answer me, man!"
"He's no soldier. Who is he? What's happening?"
"It's the young Southland lord.
Someone stop him!"
Fear pushed his lips back, baring his teeth, but he kept moving and tried to move faster. Then a woman came out into the hall, face to face with him, and he stopped in spite of himself. He recognized that face above the rest. He thought he would remember it if he lived forever. The Amelin Seat. Her eyes widened at the sight of him, and she started back. Another Aes Sedai, the tall woman he had seen with the staff, put herself between him and the Amelin, shouting something at him that he could not make out over the increasing babble.
"She knows. Light help me, she knows. Moraine told her."
Snarling, he ran on.
"Light, just let me make sure Egwene's safe before they—"
He heard shouting behind him, but he did not listen. There was enough turmoil around him out in the keep. Men running for the courtyards with swords in hand, never looking at him. Over the clamor of alarm bells, he could make out other noises now. Shouts, screams, metal ringing on metal. He had just time to realize that they were the sounds of battle.
Fighting? Inside Valdara?
When three Trollocs came dashing around a corner in front of him. Hairy snouts distorted otherwise human faces, and one of them had ram's horns. They bared teeth, raising scythe-like swords as they sped toward him. The hallway that had been full of running men a moment before was empty now except for the three Trollocs and himself. Caught by surprise, he unsheathed his sword awkwardly, tried Hummingbird Kisses the Honey Rose. Shaken at finding Trollocs in the heart of Faldara Keep, he did the form so badly, Lan would have stalked off in disgust. A bear-snouted Trolloc evaded it easily, bumping the other two off stride for just an instant. Suddenly, there were a dozen Shinarans rushing past him at the Trollocs, men half-dressed in finery for the feast, but swords at the ready. The bear-snouted Trolloc snarled as it died, and its companions ran, pursued by shouting men waving steel. Shouts and screams filled the air from everywhere.
"Egwene!"
Rand turned deeper into the keep, running down halls empty of life, though now and again a dead Trolloc lay on the floor, or a dead man. Then he came to a crossing of corridors, and to his left was the tail end of a fight. Six top-knotted men lay bleeding and still, and a seventh was dying. The murderall gave its sword an extra twist as it pulled the blade free of the man's belly, and the soldier screamed as he dropped his sword and fell. The fade moved with viperous grace, the serpent illusion heightened by the armor of black overlapping plates that covered its chest. It turned, and that pale, eyeless face studied Rand. It started toward him, smiling a bloodless smile, not hurrying. It had no need to hurry for one man alone. He felt rooted where he stood, his tongue stuck to the roof of his mouth. The look of the eyeless is fear. That was what they said along the border. His hands shook as he raised his sword. He never even thought of assuming the void.
"Light, it just killed seven armed soldiers together. Light, what am I going to do? Light!"
Abruptly, the murderall stopped, its smile gone.
"This one is mine, Rand."
Rand gave a start as Ingtar stepped up beside him, dark and stocky in a yellow feast day coat, sword held in both hands. Ingtar's dark eyes never left the Fade's face. If the Shinaran felt the fear of that gaze, he gave no sign.
"Try yourself on a Trolloc or two," he said softly, "before you face one of these." "I was coming down to see if Egwene is safe. She was going to the dungeon to visit Fain and—" "Then go see to her."
Rand swallowed.
"We'll take it together, Ingtar. You aren't ready for this. Go see to your girl. Go! You want Trollocs to find her unprotected?"
For a moment, Rand hung there, undecided. The Fade had raised its sword for Ingtar. A silent snarl twisted Ingtar's mouth, but Rand knew it was not fear. And Egwene could be alone in the dungeon with Fane, or worse. Still, he felt ashamed as he ran for the stairs that led underground. He knew a Fade's look could make any man afraid, but Ingtar had conquered the dread. His stomach still felt knotted. The corridors beneath the keep were silent and feebly lit by flickering, far-spaced lamps on the walls. He slowed as he came closer to the dungeons, creeping as silently as he could on his toes. The grate of his boots on the bare stone seemed to fill his ears. The door to the dungeons stood cracked open a handbreadth. It should have been closed and bolted. Staring at the door, he tried to swallow and could not. He opened his mouth to call out, then shut it again quickly. If Egwene was in there and in trouble, shouting would only warn whoever was endangering her. Or whatever. Taking a deep breath, he set himself. In one motion, he pushed the door wide open with the scabbard in his left hand and threw himself into the dungeon, tucking his shoulder under to roll through the straw covering the floor and come to his feet, spinning this way and that too quickly to get a clear picture of the room, looking desperately for anyone who might attack him, looking for Egwene. There was no one there. His eyes fell on the table, and he stopped dead. Breath and even thought freezing. On either side of the still-burning lamp, as if to make a centerpiece, sat the heads of the guards in two pools of blood. Their eyes stared at him, wide with fear, and their mouths gaped in a last scream no one could hear. Rand gagged and doubled over. His stomach heaved again and again as he vomited into the straw. Finally, he managed to pull himself erect, scrubbing his mouth with his sleeve. His throat felt scraped raw. Slowly, he became aware of the rest of the room, only half seen and not taken in during his hasty search for an attacker. Bloody lumps of flesh lay scattered through the straw. There was nothing he could recognize as human except the two heads. Some of the pieces looked chewed. So that's what happened to the rest of their bodies. He was surprised at the calmness of his thoughts, almost as if he had achieved the void without trying. It was the shock, he knew vaguely. He did not recognize either of the heads. The guards had been changed since he was there earlier. He was glad for that. Knowing who they were, even Changu, would have made it worse. Blood covered the walls, too, but in scrawled letters, single words and whole sentences splashed on every which way. Some were harsh and angular, in a language he did not know, though he recognized Trolloc script. Others he could read and wished he could not. Blasphemies and obscenities bad enough to make a stable hand or a merchant's guard go pale.
Egwene!
Calmness vanished. Shoving his scabbard through his belt, he snatched the lamp from the table, hardly noticing when the heads toppled over.
Egwene! Where are you?
He started toward the inner door, took two steps, and stopped, staring. The words on the door, dark and glistening wetly in the light of his lamp, were plain enough. We will meet again on Toman Head. It is never over, Althor. His sword dropped from a hand suddenly numb. Never taking his eyes off the door, he bent to pick it up. Instead, he grabbed a handful of straw and began scrubbing furiously at the words in the door. Panting, he scrubbed until it was all one bloody smear, but he could not stop.
What do you do?
At the sharp voice behind him, he whirled, stooping to seize his sword. A woman stood in the outer doorway, back stiff with outrage. Her hair was like pale gold in a dozen or more braids, but her eyes were dark and sharp on his face. She looked not much older than he, and pretty in a sulky way, but there was a tightness to her mouth he did not like. Then he saw the shawl she had wrapped tightly around her, with its long red fringe.
Aes Sedai, and light help me, she's Red Aja. I was just... It's filthy stuff, vile!
Everything must be left exactly as it is for us to examine. Touch nothing!
She took a step forward, peering at him, and he took one back.
Yes, as I thought. One of those with Moraine. What do you have to do with this?
Her gesture took in the heads on the table and the bloody scrawl on the walls. For a minute he goggled at her.
Me? Nothing. I came down here to find... Egwene!
He turned to open the inner door and the Aes Sedai shouted,
No! You will answer me!
Suddenly it was all he could do to stand up, to keep holding the lamp and his sword. Icy cold squeezed at him from all sides. he felt his head caught in a frozen vise. He could barely breathe for the pressure on his chest.
"Answer me, boy. Tell me your name."
Involuntarily, he grunted, trying to answer against the chill that seemed to be pressing his face back into his skull, constricting his chest like frozen iron bands. He clenched his jaws to keep the sound in. Painfully, he rolled his eyes to glare at her through a blur of tears.
"The light burn you, Aes Sedai. I won't say a word. The shadow take you."
"Answer me, boy. Now!"
Frozen needles pierced his brain with agony, grated into his bones. The void formed inside him before he even realized he had thought of it. But it could not hold out the pain. Dimly, he sensed light and warmth somewhere in the distance. It flickered queasily, but the light was warm, and he was cold. Distant beyond knowing, but somehow just within reach.
"Light so cold, I have to reach." "What?"
"She's killing me. I have to reach it, or she'll kill me."
Desperately, he stretched toward the light.
"What is going on here?"
Abruptly, the cold and the pressure and the needles vanished. His knees sagged, but he forced them stiff. He would not fall to his knees. He would not give her the satisfaction. The void was gone, too, as suddenly as it had come.
"She was trying to kill me."
Panting, he raised his head. Moraine stood in the doorway.
"I asked what is going on here, Leandrin," she said. "I found this boy here," the Red Aes Sedai replied calmly. "The guards are murdered, and here he is, one of yours. And what are you doing here, Moraine? The battle is above, not here." "I could ask the same of you, Leandrin."
Moraine looked around the room with only a slight tightening of her mouth for the charnel.
"Why are you here?"
Rand turned away from them awkwardly, shoved back the bolts on the inner door, and pulled it open.
"Egwene came down here," he announced for anyone who cared,
and went in, holding his lamp high. His knees kept wanting to give way. He was not sure how he stayed on his feet, only that he had to find Egwene.
"Egwene!"
A hollow gurgle and a thrashing sound came from his right, and he thrust the lamp that way. The prisoner in the fancy coat was sagging against the iron grill of his cell, his belt looped around the bars, and then around his neck. He gave one last kick, scraping across the straw-covered floor, and was still, tongue and eyes bulging out of a face gone almost black. His knees almost touched the floor. He could have stood any time he wanted to. Shivering, Rand peered into the next cell. The big man, with the sunken knuckles, huddled in the back of his cell, eyes as wide as they could open. At the sight of Rand, he screamed and twisted around, clawing frantically at the stone wall.
"I won't hurt you," Rand called.
The man kept on screaming and digging. His hands were bloody, and his scrabblings streaked across dark, congealed smears. This was not his first attempt to dig through the stone with his bare hands. Rand turned away, relieved that his stomach was already empty, but there was nothing he could do for either of them.
"Egwene!"
His light finally reached the end of the cells. The door to Fane's cell stood open, and the cell was empty, but it was the two shapes on the stone in front of the cell that made Rand leap forward and drop to his knees between them. Egwene and Matt lay sprawled, bonelessly, unconscious, or dead. With a flood of relief, he saw their chests rise and fall. There did not seem to be a mark on either of them.
"Egwene! Matt!"
Setting the sword down, he shook Egwene gently.
"Egwene."
She did not open her eyes.
"Moraine! Egwene's hurt! And Matt!"
Matt's breathing sounded labored, and his face was deathly pale. Rand felt almost like crying.
"It was supposed to hurt me. I named the Dark One me."
"Do not move them."
Moraine did not sound upset or even surprised. The chamber was suddenly flooded with light as the two Aes Sedai entered. Each balanced a glowing ball of cool light floating in the air above her hand. Leandrin marched straight down the middle of the wide hall, holding her skirts up out of the straw with her free hand, but Moraine paused to look at the two prisoners before following.
"There is nothing to do for the one," she said, "and the other can wait."
Leandrin reached Rand first and began to bend toward Egwene. but Moraine darted in ahead of her and laid her free hand on Egwene's head. Leandrin straightened with a grimace.
She is not badly hurt, Moraine said after a moment. She was struck here.
She traced an area on the side of Egwene's head, covered by her hair. Rand could see nothing different about it.
That is the only injury she has taken. She will be all right.
Rand looked from one Aes Sedai to the other.
What about Matt?
Leandrin arched an eyebrow at him and turned to watch Moraine with a wry expression.
Be quiet, Moraine said.
Fingers still lying on the area where she said Egwene had been hit, she closed her eyes. Egwene murmured and stirred, then lay still.
Is she?
She is sleeping, Rand. She will be well, but she must sleep.
Moraine shifted to Matt, but here she only touched him for a moment before drawing back.
This is more serious, she said softly.
She fumbled at Matt's wrist, pulling his coat open, and made an angry sound.
The dagger is gone.
What dagger? Leandrin asked.
Voices suddenly came from the outer room, men exclaiming in disgust and anger.
In here, Moraine called.
Bring two litters, quickly.
Someone in the outer room raised a cry for litters.
Thane is gone, Rand said.
The two Aes Sedai looked at him. He could read nothing on their faces. Their eyes glittered in the light.
So I see, Moraine said in a flat voice.
I told her not to come. I told her he was dangerous.
When I came, Leandrin said in a cold voice, he was destroying the writing in the outer chamber.
He shifted uneasily on his knees. The Aes Sedai's eyes seemed alike now, measuring and weighing him, cool and terrible.
It was filth, he said. Just filth.
They still looked at him, not speaking.
You don't think I... Moraine, you can't think I had anything to do with what happened out there.
Light, did I? I named the Dark One.
She did not answer, and he felt a chill that was not lessened by men rushing in with torches and lamps. Moraine and Leandrin let their glowing balls wink out. The lamps and torches did not give as much light. Shadows sprang up in the depths of the cells. Men with litters hurried to the figures lying on the floor. Ingtar led them. His topknot almost quivered with anger, and he looked eager to find something on which to use his sword.
So the Dark Friend is gone too, he growled. Well, it's the least of what has happened this night.
The least even here, Moraine said sharply.
She directed the men putting Egwene and Matt on the litters.
The girl is to be taken to her room. She needs a woman to watch in case she wakes in the night. She may be frightened, but more than anything else, she needs sleep now. The boy,
she touched Matt as two men lifted his litter and pulled her hand back quickly.
Take him to the Amelin Seat's chambers. Find the Amelin wherever she is and tell her he is there. Tell her his name is Matrim Cawthon. I will join her as soon as I am able.
The Amelin, Leandrin exclaimed. You think to have the Amelin as healer for your pet? You are mad, Moraine.
The Amelin Seat, Moraine said calmly, does not share your Red Aja prejudices, Leandrin. She will heal a man without need of a special use for him.
Go ahead, she told the litter bearers.
Leandrin watched them leave, Moraine and the men carrying Matt and Egwene, then turned to stare at Rand. He tried to ignore her. He concentrated on scabbarding his sword and brushing off the straw that clung to his shirt and breeches. When he raised his head, though, she was still studying him, her face as blank as ice. Saying nothing, she turned to consider the other men thoughtfully. One held the body of the hanged man up, while another worked to unfasten the belt. Ingtar and the others waited respectfully. With a last glance at Rand, she left, head held like a queen.
A hard woman, Ingtar muttered, then seemed surprised that he had spoken. What happened here, Randalthor?
Rand shook his head.
I don't know, except that Fane escaped somehow, and heard Egwene and Matt doing it. I saw the guard room.
He shuddered.
But in here, whatever it was, Ingtar, it scared that fellow bad enough that he hung himself. I think the other one's gone mad from seeing it.
We're all going mad tonight.
The Fade, you killed it?
No!
Ingtar slammed his sword into its sheath. The hilt stuck up above his right shoulder. He seemed angry and ashamed at the same time.
It's out of the keep by now, along with the rest of what we could not kill.
At least you're alive, Ingtar. That Fade killed 7 men.
Alive? Is that so important?
Suddenly Ingtar's face was no longer angry, but tired and full of pain.
We had it in our hands. In our hands! And we lost it, Rand! Lost it!
He sounded as if he could not believe what he was saying.
Lost what? Rand asked.
The horn! The Horn of Valir! It's gone, chest and all!
But it was in the strong room.
The strong room was looted, Ingtar said wearily. They did not take much, except for the horn. What they could stuff in their pockets. I wish they had taken everything else and left that.
Ronan is dead, and the watchman he had guarding the strong room.
His voice became quiet.
When I was a boy, Ronan held Jahan Tower with 20 men against 1,000 Trollocs. He did not go down easily, though. The old man had blood on his dagger. No man can ask more than that.
He was silent for a moment.
They came in through the dog gate and left the same way. We put an end to 50 or more, but too many escaped. Trollocs! We've never before had Trollocs inside the keep. Never!
How could they get in through the dog gate, Ingtar? One man could stop 100 there. And all the gates were barred.
He shifted uneasily, remembering why.
The guards would not have opened it to let anybody in.
Their throats were cut,
Ingtar said.
Both good men, and yet they were butchered like pigs. It was done from inside. Someone killed them, then opened the gate. Someone who could get close to them without suspicion. Someone they knew.
Rand looked at the empty cell where Padan Fain had been.
But that means...
Yes. There are dark friends inside Faldara. Or were. We will soon know if that's the case. Kadjin is checking now to see if anyone is missing. Peace. Treachery in Faldara keep.
Scowling, he looked around the dungeon at the men waiting for him. They all had swords, worn over feast day clothes, and some had helmets.
We aren't doing any good here. Out, everyone!
Rand joined the withdrawal. Ingtar tapped Rand's jerkin.
What is this? Have you decided to become a stableman?
It's a long story, Rand said.
Too long to tell here.
Maybe some other time.
Maybe never if I'm lucky. Maybe I can escape in all this confusion. No, I can't. Not until I know Egwene's all right, and Matt. Light, what will happen to him without the dagger?
I suppose Lord Agamar's doubled the guard on all the gates.
Tripled, Ingtar said in tones of satisfaction. No one will pass those gates from inside or out. As soon as Lord Agamar heard what had happened, he ordered that no one was to be allowed to leave the keep without his personal permission.
As soon as he heard?
Ingtar, what about before? What about the earlier order keeping everyone in?
Earlier order?
What earlier order?
Rand, the keep was not closed until Lord Agamar heard of this. Someone told you wrong.
Rand shook his head slowly.
Neither Ragan nor Tima would have made up something like that. And even if the Amarlin Seat had given the order, Ingtar would have to know of it.
So who? And how?
He glanced sideways at Ingtar, wondering if the Shinaran was lying.
You really are going mad if you suspect Ingtar.
They were in the dungeon guard room now. The severed heads and the pieces of the guards had been removed, though there were still red smears in the table and damp patches in the straw to show where they had been. 2 Aes Sedai were there, placid-looking women with brown-fringed shawls studying the words scrawled on the walls, careless of what their skirts dragged through in the straw. Each had an inkpot in a writing case hung at her belt and was making notes in a small book with a pen. They never even glanced at the men trooping through.
Look here, Varen, one of them said, pointing to a section of stone covered with lines of Trolloc script. This looks interesting.
The other hurried over, picking up reddish stains on her skirt.
Yes, I see. A much better hand than the rest. Not a Trolloc. Very interesting.
She began writing in her book, looking up every so often to read the angular letters on the wall. Rand hurried out. Even if they had not been Aes Sedai, he would not have wanted to remain in the same room with anyone who thought reading Trolloc script written in human blood was interesting.
Ingtar and his men stalked on ahead, intent on their duties.
Rand dawdled, wondering where he could go now. Getting back into the women's apartments would not be easy without Egwene to help.
Light, let her be all right. Maureen said she'd be all right.
Lan found him before he reached the first stairs leading up.
You can go back to your room if you want, sheepherder. Moraine had your things fetched from Egwene's room and taken to yours.
How did she know?
Moraine knows a great many things, sheepherder. You should understand that by now. You had better watch yourself. The women are all talking about you, staring down the Ammerlin, waving a sword. So they say.
Light. I am sorry they're angry, Lan, but I was invited in. And when I heard the alarm... Burn me. Egwene was down here.
Lan pursed his lips thoughtfully. It was the only expression on his face.
Oh, they're not angry, exactly. Though most of them think you need a strong hand to settle you down some. Fascinated is more like it. Even the Lady Amelisa can't stop asking questions about you. Some of them are starting to believe the servants' tales. They think you're a prince in disguise, sheepherder. Not a bad thing. There is an old saying here in the Borderlands. Better to have one woman on your side than 10 men. The way they are talking among themselves, they're trying to decide whose daughter is strong enough to handle you. If you don't watch your step, sheepherder, you will find yourself married into a Shinaran house before you realize what has happened. Suddenly he burst out laughing. It looked odd, like a rock laughing.
Running through the halls of the women's apartments in the middle of the night, wearing a laborer's jerkin and waving a sword. If they don't have you flogged at the very least, they'll talk about you for years. They have never seen a male as peculiar as you. Whatever wife they chose for you, she'd probably have you the head of your own house in 10 years, and have you thinking you had done it yourself besides. It is too bad you have to leave.
Rand had been gaping at the water, but now he growled.
I have been trying. The gates were guarded and no one can leave. I tried while it was still daylight. I couldn't even take Red out of the stable.
No matter now. Moraine sent me to tell you. You can leave any time you want to, even right now.
Moraine had Aglamar exempt you from the order.
Why now and not earlier? Why couldn't I leave before? Was she the one who had the gates barred then? Ingtar said he knew nothing about any order to keep people in before tonight.
Rand thought the water looked troubled, but all he said was,
When someone gives you a horse, sheepherder, don't complain that it isn't as fast as you'd like.
What about Egwene and Matt? Are they really all right? I can't leave until I know they're all right.
The girl is fine. She'll wake in the morning and probably not even remember what happened. Blows to the head are like that.
What about Matt?
The choice is up to you, sheepherder. You can leave now, or tomorrow, or next week. It's up to you.
He walked away, leaving Rand standing there in the corridor deep under Faldara Keep.
Chapter 7 Blood Calls Blood. As the litter-carrying Matt left the Ammerlin Seat's chambers, Moiraine carefully rewrapped the Angreal, a small, age-darkened ivory carving of a woman in flowing robes, in a square of silk, and put it back into her pouch. Working together with the other Aes Sedai, merging their abilities, channeling the flow of the one power to a single task, was tiring work under the best conditions, even with the aid of an Angreal. And working through the night without sleep was not the best conditions. And the work they had done on the boy had not been easy. Lyanna directed the litter-bearers out with sharp gestures and a few crisp words. The two men kept ducking their heads, nervous at being around so many Aes Sedai at once, and one of them, the Ammerlin herself, never mind that the Aes Sedai had been using the power. They had waited in the corridor, squatting against the wall while the work was done, and they were anxious to be gone from the women's apartments. Matt lay with his eyes closed and his face pale, but his chest rose and fell in the even rhythm of a deep sleep. How will this affect matters? Moiraine wondered. He is not necessary with the horn gone, and yet... The door closed behind Lyanna and the litter-bearers, and the Ammerlin drew an unsteady breath. A nasty business, that. Nasty. Her face was smooth, but she rubbed her hands together as if she wanted to wash them. "But quite interesting," Varen said. She had been the fourth Aes Sedai the Ammerlin had chosen for the work. "It is too bad we do not have the dagger so the healing could be complete. For all we did tonight, he will not live long. Months, perhaps, at best." The three Aes Sedai were alone in the Ammerlin's chambers. Beyond the arrow slits, dawn pearled the sky. "But he will have those months now," Moiraine said sharply. "And if it can be retrieved, the link can still be broken." "If it can be retrieved, yes, of course." "It can still be broken," Varen agreed. She was a plump, square-faced woman, and even with the Aes Sedai gift of agelessness, there was a touch of gray in her brown hair. That was her only sign of age, but for an Aes Sedai it meant she was very old indeed. Her voice held steady, though, matching her smooth cheeks. "He has been linked to the dagger a long time, however, as a thing like that must be reckoned, and he will be linked longer yet, whether it is found or not. He may already be changed beyond the reach of full healing, even if no longer enough to contaminate others. Such a small thing, that dagger," she mused, "but it will corrupt whoever carries it long enough. He who carries it will in turn corrupt those who come in contact with him, and they will corrupt still others, and the hatred and suspicion that destroyed Shadar Logoth, every man and woman's hand turned against every other, will be loose in the world again. I wonder how many people it can taint in, say, a year. It should be possible to calculate a reasonable approximation." Moiraine gave the brown sister a wry look. "Another danger confronts us, and she sounds as if it is a puzzle in a book. Light, the Browns truly are not aware of the world at all." "Then we must find the dagger, sister. Agilmar is sending men to hunt those who took the horn and slew his oathmen, the same who took the dagger. If one is found, the other will be." Varen nodded, but frowned at the same time. "Yet, even if it is found, who can return it safely? Whoever touches it risks the taint if they handle it long. Perhaps in a chest, well wrapped and padded, but it would still be dangerous to those nearby for any great time. Without the dagger itself to study, we cannot be sure how much it must be shielded. But you saw it, and more, Moiraine. You dealt with it, enough for that young man to survive carrying it and to stop him infecting others. You must have a good idea of how strong its influence is." "There is one," Moiraine said, "who can retrieve the dagger without being harmed by it. One whom we have shielded and buffered against that taint as much as anyone can be. Matt Cawthon." The Ammerlin nodded. "Yes, of course. He can do it, if he lives long enough. The light only knows how far it will be carried before Agilmar's men find it, if they do find it. And if the boy dies first, well, if the dagger is loose that long, we have another worry." She rubbed her eyes tiredly. "I think we must find this Padan Fane, too. Why is this dark friend important enough for them to risk what they did to rescue him? Much easier for them just to steal the horn. Still risky as a winter gale in the Sea of Storms coming into the very keep like that, but they compounded their risk to free this dark friend. If the Lurks think he is that important..." She paused, and Moiraine knew she was wondering if it truly was still only the Myrdral giving commands. "Then so must we." "He must be found," Moiraine agreed, hoping that none of the urgency she felt showed. "But it is likely he will be found with the horn." "As you say, daughter." The Ammerlin pressed fingers to her lips to stifle a yawn. "And now, Varen, if you will excuse me, I will just say a few words to Moiraine and then sleep a little. I suppose Agilmar will insist on feasting tonight, since last night was spoiled. Your help was invaluable, daughter. Please remember, say nothing of the nature of the boy's hurt to anyone. There are some of your sisters who would see the shadow in him, instead of a thing men made on their own. There was no need to name the Red Aja, and perhaps, Moraine thought, the Reds were no longer the only ones of whom it was necessary to be wary. "I will say nothing, of course, Mother." Varen bowed, but made no move toward the door. "I thought you might wish to see this, Mother." She pulled a small notebook, bound in soft brown leather, from her belt. "What was written on the walls in the dungeon? There were few problems with translation. Most was the usual, blasphemy and boasting. Trolloc seemed to know little else, but there was one part done in a better hand. An educated dark friend, or perhaps a murdral. It could be only taunting, yet it has the form of poetry, or song, and the sound of prophecy. We know little of prophecies from the Shadow Mother." The Amarlin hesitated only a moment before nodding. Prophecies from the Shadow, dark prophecies, had an unfortunate way of being fulfilled as well as prophecies from the light. "Read it to me." Varen ruffled through the pages, then cleared her throat and began in a calm, level voice. "Daughter of the night, she walks again. The ancient war she yet fights. Her new lover she seeks, who shall serve her and die, yet serve still. Who shall stand against her coming? The shining walls shall kneel. Blood feeds blood. Blood calls blood. Blood is and blood was and blood shall ever be. The man who channels stands alone. He gives his friends for sacrifice. Two roads before him, one to death beyond dying, one to life eternal. Which will he choose? Which will he choose? What hand shelters? What hand slays? Blood feeds blood. Blood calls blood. Blood is and blood was and blood shall ever be. Luke came to the mountains of doom. Isam waited in the high passes. The hunt is now begun. The Shadow's hounds now course and kill. One did live and one did die, but both are. The time of change has come. Blood feeds blood. Blood calls blood. Blood is and blood was and blood shall ever be. The watchers wait on Toman's head. The seed of the hammer burns the ancient tree. Death shall sow and summer burn before the great Lord comes. Death shall reap and bodies fail before the great Lord comes. Again the seed slays ancient wrong before the great Lord comes. Now the great Lord comes. Now the great Lord comes. Blood feeds blood. Blood calls blood. Blood is and blood was and blood shall ever be. Now the great Lord comes. There was a long silence when she finished. Finally the Amarlin said, "Who else has seen this, daughter? Who knows of it?" "Only Seraphel, Mother. As soon as we had copied it down, I had men scrub the walls. They didn't question. They were eager to be rid of it." The Amarlin nodded. "Good. Too many in the borderlands can puzzle out Trolloc script. No need to give them something else to worry over. They have enough." "What do you make of it?" Moiraine asked Varen in a careful voice. "Is it prophecy, do you think?" Varen tilted her head, peering at her notes in thought. "Possibly. It has the form of some of the few dark prophecies we know, and parts of it are clear enough. It could still be only a taunt, though." She rested a finger on one line. "Daughter of the night, she walks again. That can only mean Lanfear is loose again, or someone wants us to think she is." "That would be something to worry us, daughter," the Amarlin Seat said, "if it were true. But the Forsaken are still bound." She glanced at Moiraine, looking troubled for an instant before she schooled her features. "Even if the seals are weakening, the Forsaken are still bound. Lanfear, in the old tongue, daughter of the night. Nowhere was her real name recorded, but that was the name she had taken for herself, unlike most of the Forsaken who had been named by those they betrayed. Some said she had really been the most powerful of the Forsaken, next to Ishamael, the betrayer of hope, but had kept her powers hidden. Too little was left from that time for any scholar to say for certain. With all the false dragons that are appearing, it is not surprising someone would try to bring Lanfear into it." Moiraine's voice was as unruffled as her face, but inside herself she roiled. Only one thing for certain was known of Lanfear beside the name. Before she went over to the Shadow, before Luz Theron Telamon met Ilyena, Lanfear had been his lover. A complication we do not need. The Ammerlin Seat frowned as if she had had the same thought, but Verin nodded as if it were all just words. Other names are clear, too, Mother. Lord Luke, of course, was brother to Tigraine, then the daughter heir of Andor, and he vanished in the Blight. Who Isam is, or what he has to do with Luke, I do not know, however. We will find out what we need to know in time, Moiraine said smoothly. There is no proof as yet that this is prophecy. She knew the name. Isam had been the son of Brayan, wife of Lane Mandragoran, whose attempt to seize the throne of Malkyr for her husband had brought the Trolloc hordes crashing down. Brayan and her infant son had both vanished when the Trollocs overran Malkyr, and Isam had been blood kin to Lan. Or is blood kin? I must keep this from him until I know how he will react, until we are away from the Blight. If he thought Isam were alive. The Watchers wait on Toman Head, Verin went on. There are a few who still cling to the old belief that the armies Artur Hawkwing sent across the Arith Ocean will return one day, though after all this time, she gave a disdainful sniff. The Domier of Ron, the Watchers over the waves, still have a community is the best word, I suppose, on Toman Head at Falma. And one of the old names for Artur Hawkwing was Hammer of the Light. Are you suggesting, daughter, the Ammerlin Seat said, that Artur Hawkwing's armies, or rather their descendants, might actually return after 1,000 years? There are rumors of war on Almuth Plain and Toman Head, Moiraine said slowly, and Hawkwing sent 2 of his sons as well as armies. If they did survive in whatever lands they found, there could well be many descendants of Hawkwing, or none. The Ammerlin gave Moiraine a guarded look, obviously wishing they were alone, so she could demand to know what Moiraine was up to. Moiraine made a soothing gesture, and her old friend grimaced at her. Verin, with her nose still buried in her notes, noticed none of it. I don't know, Mother. I doubt it, though. We know nothing at all of those lands Artur Hawkwing set out to conquer. It's too bad the sea folk refuse to cross the Arith Ocean. They say the Islands of the Dead lie on the other side. I wish I knew what they meant by that, but that accursed sea folk close-mouthedness. She sighed, still not raising her head. All we have is one reference to lands under the shadow, beyond the setting sun, beyond the Arith Ocean where the armies of night reign. Nothing there to tell us if the armies Hawkwing sent were enough by themselves to defeat these armies of the night, or even to survive Hawkwing's death. Once the War of the 100 Years started, everyone was too intent on carving out their own part of Hawkwing's empire to spare a thought for his armies across the sea. It seems to me, Mother, that if their descendants still lived, and if they ever intended to return, they would not have waited so long. Then you believe it is not prophecy, daughter? Now, the ancient tree, Verin said, immersed in her own thoughts. There have always been rumors, no more than that, that while the nation of Almuth still lived, they had a branch of Avendasora, perhaps even a living sapling. And the banner of Almuth was blue for the sky above, black for the earth below, with the spreading tree of life to join them. Of course, Tara Bonners call themselves the Tree of Man and claim to be descended from rulers and nobles in the Age of Legends, and Domani claim descent from those who made the Tree of Life in the Age of Legends. There are other possibilities, but you will note, Mother, that at least 3 center around Almuth Plain and Toman Head. The Ammerlin's voice became deceptively gentle. Will you make up your mind, daughter? If Artur Hawkwing's seed is not returning, then this is not prophecy, and it doesn't matter a rotted fish head what ancient tree is meant. I can only give you what I know, Mother, Verin said, looking up from her notes, and leave the decision in your hands. I believe the last of Artur Hawkwing's foreign armies died long ago, but because I believe it does not make it so. The time of change, of course, refers to the end of an age, and the great lord—" The Ammerlin slapped the tabletop like a thunderclap. "I know very well who the great lord is, daughter. I think you had better go now." She took a deep breath and took hold of herself visibly. "Go, Varen. I do not want to become angry with you. I do not want to forget who it was had the cook's leave sweet cakes out at night when I was a novice." "Mother," Moiraine said, "there is nothing in this to suggest prophecy. Anyone with a little wit and a little knowledge could put together as much, and no one has ever said Myrdral do not have a sly wit." "And, of course," Varen said calmly, "the man who channels must be one of the three young men traveling with you, Moiraine." Moiraine stared in shock. "Not aware of the world? I am a fool." Before she realized what she was doing, she had reached out to the pulsing glow she always felt there waiting, to the true source. The one power surged along her veins, charging her with energy, muting the sheen of the power from the Ammerlin seat as she did the same. Moiraine had never before even thought of wielding the power against another Aes Sedai. "We live in perilous times, and the world hangs in the balance, and what must be done must be done. It must. Oh, Varen, why did you have to put your nose in where it does not belong?" Varen closed her book and slipped it back behind her belt, then looked from one woman to the other. She could not but be aware of the nimbus surrounding each of them, the light that came from touching the true source. Only someone trained in channeling herself could see the glow, but there was no chance of any Aes Sedai missing it in another woman. A hint of satisfaction settled on Varen's face, but no sign that she realized she had hurled a lightning bolt. She only looked as if she had found another piece that fit in a puzzle. "Yes, I thought it must be so. Moiraine could not do this alone, and who better to help than her girlhood friend who used to sneak down with her to snitch sweet cakes?" She blinked. "Forgive me, mother. I should not have said that." "Varen, Varen." The Ammerlin shook her head wonderingly. "You accuse your sister and me of... I won't even say it. And you are worried that you've spoken too familiarly to the Ammerlin seat? You bore a hole in the boat and worry that it's raining. Think what you are suggesting, daughter." "It is too late for that, Siouan," Moiraine thought. "If we had not panicked and reached for the source, perhaps then, but she is sure now." "Why are you telling us this, Varen?" she said aloud. "If you believe what you say, you should be telling it to the other sisters, to the Reds in particular." Varen's eyes widened in surprise. "Yes? Yes, I suppose I should. I hadn't thought of that. But then, if I did, you would be stilled, Moiraine, and you, mother, and the man gentled. No one has ever recorded the progression in a man who wields the power. When does the madness come, exactly? And how does it take him? How quickly does it grow? Can he still function with his body rotting around him? For how long? Unless he is gentled, what will happen to the young man, whichever he is, will happen whether or not I am there to put down the answers. If he is watched and guided, we should be able to keep some record with reasonable safety, for a time at least. And, too, there is the Kariathon cycle." She calmly returned their startled looks. "I assume, mother, that he is the dragon reborn. I cannot believe you would do this, leave walking free a man who can channel, unless he was the dragon." "She thinks only of the knowledge," Moiraine thought wonderingly. "The culmination of the direst prophecy the world knows, perhaps the end of the world, and she cares only about the knowledge. But she is still dangerous for that." "Who else knows of this?" The Ammerlin's voice was faint, but still sharp. "Seraphel, I suppose. Who else, Varen?" "No one, mother. Seraphel is not really interested in anything that someone hasn't already set down in a book, preferably as long ago as possible. She thinks there are enough old books and manuscripts and fragments scattered about, lost or forgotten, to equal 10 times what we have gathered in Tar Valon. She feels certain there is enough of the old knowledge still there to be found for—
Enough, sister, Moiraine said.
She loosed her hold on the true source, and after a moment felt the Ammerlin do the same. It was always a loss to feel the power draining away, like blood and life pouring from an open wound. A part of her wanted to hold on, but unlike some of her sisters, she made it a point of self-discipline not to grow too fond of the feeling.
Sit down, Varen, and tell us what you know and how you found it out. Leave out nothing.
As Varen took a chair, with a look to the Ammerlin for permission to sit in her presence, Moiraine watched her sadly.
It is unlikely, Varen began, that anyone who hasn't studied the old records thoroughly would notice anything except that you were behaving oddly. Forgive me, Mother. It was nearly 20 years ago, with Tar Valon besieged, that I had my first clue, and that was only—
Light help me, Varen, how I loved you for those sweet cakes, and for your bosom to weep on. But I will do what I must do. I will. I must.
Perrin peered around the corner at the retreating back of the Aes Sedai. She smelled of lavender soap, though most would not have scented it even close up. As soon as she turned out of sight, he hurried for the infirmary door. He had already tried to see Matt once, and that Aes Sedai, Lyanna, he had heard somebody call her, had nearly snapped his head off without even looking around to see who he was. He felt uneasy around Aes Sedai, especially if they started looking at his eyes. Pausing at the door to listen, he could hear no footsteps down the corridor either way, and nothing on the other side of the door, he went in and closed it softly behind him. The infirmary was a long room with white walls, and the entrances to archers' balconies at either end let in lots of light. Matt was in one of the narrow beds that lined the walls. After last night, Perrin had expected most of the beds to have men in them, but in a moment he realized the keep was full of Aes Sedai. The only thing an Aes Sedai could not cure by healing was death. To him, the room smelled of sickness anyway. Perrin grimaced when he thought of that. Matt lay still, eyes closed, hands unmoving atop his blankets. He looked exhausted. Not sick, really, but as if he had worked 3 days in the fields and only now laid down to rest. He smelled wrong, though. It was nothing Perrin could put a name to, just wrong. Perrin sat down carefully on the bed next to Matt's. He always did things carefully. He was bigger than most people, and had been bigger than the other boys as long as he could remember. He had had to be careful so he would not hurt someone accidentally or break things. Now it was second nature to him. He liked to think things through, too, and sometimes talk them over with somebody. With Rand thinking he's a lord, I can't talk to him, and Matt certainly isn't going to have much to say. He had gone into one of the gardens the night before to think things through. The memory still made him a little ashamed. If he had not gone, he would have been in his room to go with Egwene and Matt, and maybe he could have kept them from being hurt. More likely, he knew, he would be in one of those beds like Matt, or dead, but that did not change the way he felt. Still, he had gone to the garden, and it was nothing to do with the Trolloc attack that was worrying him now. Serving women had found him sitting there in the dark, and one of the Lady Amelisa's attendants, the Lady Tamora. As soon as they came upon him, Tamora sent one of the others running, and he had heard her say, "Find Leandrin Sedai, quickly." They had stood there watching him as if they had thought he might vanish in a puff of smoke like a gleeman. That had been when the first alarm bell rang and everybody in the keep started running. "Leandrin," he muttered now. "Red Adja. About all they do is hunt for men who channel. You don't think she believes I'm one of those, do you?" Matt did not answer, of course. Perrin rubbed his nose ruefully. "Now I'm talking to myself. I don't need that on top of everything else." Matt's eyelids fluttered.
"Who? Perrin? What happened?"
His eyes did not open all the way, and his voice sounded as if he were still mostly asleep.
"Don't you remember, Matt?"
"Remember?" Matt sleepily raised a hand toward his face, and then let it fall again with a sigh. His eyes began to drift shut.
Remember, Egwene asked me, go down, see Fane.
He laughed, and it turned into a yawn.
She didn't ask. Told me. Don't know what happened after.
He smacked his lips and resumed the deep, even breathing of sleep. Perrin leaped to his feet as his ears caught the sound of approaching footsteps, but there was nowhere to go. He was still standing there beside Matt's bed when the door opened, and Lyanna came in. She stopped, put her fists on her hips, and looked him slowly up and down. She was nearly as tall as he was.
Now you, she said, in tones quiet yet brisk, are almost a pretty enough boy to make me wish I was a green. Almost. But if you've disturbed my patient, well, I dealt with brothers almost as big as you before I went to the tower, so you needn't think those shoulders will help you any.
Perrin cleared his throat. Half the time he did not understand what women meant when they said things.
Not like Rand. He always knows what to say to the girls.
He realized he was scowling and wiped it away. He did not want to think about Rand, but he certainly did not want to upset an Aes Sedai, especially one who was beginning to tap her foot impatiently.
I didn't disturb him. He's still sleeping, see? So he is. A good thing for you. Now, what are you doing in here? I remember chasing you out once. You needn't think I don't. I only wanted to know how he is.
She hesitated.
He is sleeping, is how he is, and in a few hours, he will get out of that bed and you'll think there was never anything wrong with him.
The pause made his hackles rise. She was lying, somehow. Aes Sedai never lied, but they did not always tell the truth, either. He was not certain what was going on. Leandrin looking for him, Lyanna lying to him. But he thought it was time he got away from Aes Sedai. There was nothing he could do for Matt.
Thank you, he said. I'd better let him sleep then. Excuse me.
He tried to slide around her to the door, but suddenly her hand shot out and grabbed his face, tilting it down so she could peer into his eyes. Something seemed to pass through him, a warm ripple that started at the top of his head and went to his feet, then came back again. He pulled his head out of her hands.
You're as healthy as a young wild animal, she said, pursing her lips. But if you were born with those eyes, I am a white cloak. They're the only eyes I ever had, he growled.
He felt a little abashed, speaking to an Aes Sedai in that tone, but he was as surprised as she when he took her gently by the arms and lifted her to one side, setting her down again out of his way. As they stared at each other, he wondered if his eyes were as wide with shock as hers.
Excuse me, he said again, and all but ran. My eyes, my light cursed eyes.
The morning sunlight caught his eyes, and they glinted like burnished gold. Rand twisted on his bed, trying to find a comfortable position on the thin mattress. Sunlight streamed through the arrow slits, painting the bare stone walls. He had not slept during the remainder of the night, and tired as he was sure he could not sleep now. The leather jerkin lay on the floor between his bed and the wall, but aside from that, he was fully dressed, even to his new boots. His sword stood propped beside the bed, and his bow and quiver rested in a corner across the bundled cloaks. He could not rid himself of the feeling that he should take the chance Moraine had given him and leave immediately. The urge had been with him all night. 3 times he had risen to go. 2 times he had gone as far as opening the door. The halls had been empty except for a few servants doing late chores. The way had been clear. But he had to know.
Perrin came in, head down and yawning, and Rand sat up. How is Egwene and Matt? She's asleep, so they tell me. They wouldn't let me into the women's apartments to see her. Matt is...
Suddenly Perrin scowled at the floor.
If you're so interested, why haven't you gone to see him yourself? I thought you were not interested in us anymore. You said you weren't.
He pulled open his door of the wardrobe and began rummaging for a clean shirt.
I did go to the infirmary, Perrin. There was an Aes Sedai there, that tall one who's always with the Ammerlin seat. She said Matt was asleep, and I was in the way, and I could come back some other time.
She sounded like Master Thane ordering the men at the mill. You know how Master Thane is, all full of snap and do it right the first time and do it right now? Perrin did not answer. He just shucked off his coat and pulled his shirt off over his head. Rand studied his friend's back for a moment, then dug up a laugh.
You want to hear something? You know what she said to me? The Aes Sedai in the infirmary, I mean. You saw how tall she is, as tall as most men. A hand taller, and she could almost look me in the eyes. Well, she stared me up and down, and then she muttered, "Tall, aren't you? Where were you when I was 16, or even 30? And then she laughed as if it was all a joke. What do you think of that?
Perrin finished tugging on a clean shirt and gave him a sidelong look. With his burly shoulders and thick curls, he made Rand think of a hurt bear. A bear that did not understand why he had been hurt.
Perrin, I'm...
If you want to make jokes with Aes Sedai, Perrin broke in, that's up to you, my lord. He began stuffing his shirt tail into his breeches. I don't spend much time being... witty, is that the word? Witty with Aes Sedai. But then, I'm only a clumsy blacksmith, and I might be in somebody's way, my lord. Snatching his coat from the floor, he started for the door.
Burn me, Perrin, I'm sorry. I was afraid and I thought I was in trouble. Maybe I was, maybe I still am. I don't know. And I didn't want you and Matt to be in it with me. Light, all the women were looking for me last night. I think that's part of the trouble I'm in. I think so. And Leandrin, she...
He threw up his hands.
Perrin, believe me, you don't want any part of this.
Perrin had stopped, but he stood facing the door and only turned his head enough for Rand to see one golden eye.
Looking for you. Maybe they were looking for all of us. No, they were looking for me. I wish they hadn't been, but I know better.
Perrin shook his head.
Leandrin wanted me anyway, I know. I heard.
Rand frowned.
Why would she... It doesn't change anything. Look, I opened my mouth and said what I shouldn't. I didn't mean it, Perrin. Now please, would you tell me about Matt?
He's asleep. Lyanna, that's the Aes Sedai, said he would be on his feet in a few hours. He shrugged uncomfortably.
I think she was lying. I know Aes Sedai never lie, not so you can catch them, but she was lying or keeping something back.
He paused, looking at Rand sideways.
You didn't mean all that? We will leave here together? You and me and Matt? I can't, Perrin. I can't tell you why, but I really do have to go by my... Perrin, wait!
The door slammed behind his friend. Rand fell back on the bed.
I can't tell you,
he muttered. He pounded his fist on the side of the bed.
I can't!
But you can go now, a voice said in the back of his head. Egwene's going to be all right, and Matt will be up and around in an hour or two. You can go now, before Moraine changes her mind. He started to sit up when a pounding on the door made him leap to his feet. If it was Perrin come back, he would not knock. The pounding came again.
Who is it?
Lan strode in, pushing the door to behind him with his boot heel. As usual, he wore his sword over a plain coat of green that was nearly invisible in the woods. This time, though, he had a wide golden cord tied high around his left arm, the fringed ends hanging almost to his elbow. On the knot was pinned a golden crane in flight, the symbol of Malkir.
The Ammerlin's seat wants you, sheepherder. You can't go like that. Out of that shirt and brush your hair, you look like a haystack.
He jerked open the wardrobe and began pawing through the clothes Rand meant to leave behind. Rand stood stiff where he was. He felt as though he had been hit in the head with a hammer. He had expected it, of course, in a way, but he had been sure he would be gone before the summons came.
She knows. Light, I'm sure of it. What do you mean, she wants me? I'm leaving, Lan. You were right. I'm going to the stable right now, get my horse and leave.
You should have done that last night.
The warder tossed a white silk shirt onto the bed.
No one refuses an audience with the Ammerlin's seat, sheepherder. Not the Lord Captain Commander of the White Cloaks himself. Pedro Nial might spend the trip planning how to kill her, if he could do it and get away, but he would come.
He turned around with one of the high-collared coats in his hands and held it up. This one will do. Tangled, long-thorned briars climbed each red sleeve in a thick, gold-embroidered line and ran around each cuff. Golden herons stood on the collars, which were edged with gold.
The color is right, too.
He seemed to be amused at something or satisfied.
Come on, sheepherder. Change your shirt. Move.
Reluctantly, Rand pulled the coarse wool workman's shirt over his head.
I'll feel like a fool, he muttered. A silk shirt? I never wore a silk shirt in my life. And I never wore so fancy a coat, either, even on a feast day.
Light, if Perrin sees me in that. Burn me, after all that fool talk about being a lord, if he sees me in that, he'll never listen to reason.
You can't go before the Amelin seat dressed like a groom fresh out of the stable, sheepherder. Let me see your boots. They'll do. Well, get on with it. Get on with it. You don't keep the Amelin waiting. Wear your sword.
My sword?
The silk shirt over his head muffled Rand's yelp. He yanked it the rest of the way on.
In the women's apartments? Lan, if I go for an audience with the Amelin seat, wearing a sword, she'll...
Do nothing, Lan cut him off dryly. If the Amelin is afraid of you, and it's smarter for you to think she isn't because I don't know anything that could frighten that woman, it won't be for a sword. Now remember, you kneel when you go before her. One knee only, mind, he added sharply. You're not some merchant caught giving short weight. Maybe you had better practice it.
I know how I think. I saw the Queen's guards knelt to Queen Morgaze.
The ghost of a smile touched the warder's lips.
Yes, you'd do it just as they did. That will give them something to think about.
Rand frowned.
Why are you telling me this, Lan? You're a warder. You're acting as if you are on my side.
I am on your side, sheepherder. A little. Enough to help you a bit.
The warder's face was stone, and sympathetic words sounded strange in that rough voice.
What training you've had I gave you, and I'll not have you groveling and sniveling. The wheel weaves us all into the pattern as it wills. You have less freedom about it than most, but by the light you can still face it on your feet. You remember who the Amelin seat is, sheepherder, and you show her proper respect, but you do what I tell you, and you look her in the eye. Well, don't stand there gaping. Tuck in your shirt.
Rand shut his mouth and tucked in his shirt.
Remember who she is? Burn me what I wouldn't give to forget who she is.
Lan kept up a running flow of instructions while Rand shrugged into the red coat and buckled on his sword. What to say and to whom and what not to say. What to do and what not. How to move, even. He was not sure he could remember it all. Most of it sounded odd and easy to forget, and he was sure whatever he forgot would be just the thing to make the Aes Sedai angry with him.
If they aren't already. If Moraine told the Amelin seat, who else did she tell? Lan, why can't I just leave the way I planned? By the time she knew I was not coming, I'd be a league outside the walls and galloping.
And she'd have trackers after you before you had gone too. What the Amelin wants, sheepherder, she gets.
He adjusted Rand's sword belt so the heavy buckle was centered.
What I do is the best I can for you, believe it.
But why all this? What does it mean? Why do I put my hand over my heart if the Amelin seat stands up? Why refuse anything but water? Not that I want to eat a meal with her. Then dribble some on the floor and say, the land thirsts. And if she asks how old I am, why tell her how long it is since I was given the sword? I don't understand half of what you've told me.
3 drops, sheepherder. Don't pour it. You sprinkle 3 drops only. You can understand later, so long as you remember now. Think of it as upholding custom. The Amelin will do with you as she must. If you believe you can avoid it, then you believe you can fly to the moon like Len. You can't escape, but maybe you can hold your own for a while, and perhaps you can keep your pride at least. The light burned me, I am probably wasting my time, but I've nothing better to do. Hold still.
From his pocket, the warder produced a long length of wide-fringed golden cord and tied it around Rand's left arm in a complicated knot. On the knot he fastened a red enameled pin, an eagle with its wings spread.
I had that made to give you, and now is as good a time as any. That will make them think.
There was no doubt about it now. The warder was smiling. Rand looked down at the pin worriedly. Kaldazar, the Red Eagle of Monetherin. A thorn to the Dark One's foot, he murmured, and a bramble to his hand. He looked at the warder. Monetherin's long dead and forgotten, Lan. It's just a name in a book now. There is only the two rivers. Whatever else I am, I'm a shepherd and a farmer, that's all.
Well, the sword that could not be broken was shattered in the end, sheepherder, but it fought the shadow to the last. There was one rule above all others for being a man. Whatever comes, face it on your feet. Now, are you ready? The Amelin seat waits. With a cold knot on the pit of his belly, Rand followed the warder into the hall.